All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Absolute News Namus. Today, a group of 26 nationally recognized experts from social sciences, education, and the legal field were assembled 3 years ago. And they now have completed their work compiling and analyzing a huge body of research that challenges every notion that people have behind the frequent use of disciplinary policies that take kids out of the classroom. Kariga Rausch, formerly who worked with charter schools here under Bart Peterson, and Greg Ballard, who headed Stand for Children here, has been back in school trying to get his doctorate. And they made him do all this work so he can get the doctorate degree. He's been part of this team of researchers. He's on our live line. Kariga, how you doing?
Amos, good to hear your voice. Thank you for the opportunity as always, sir.
So this thing is basically saying the kind of common sense that my listeners have been saying for years. Some of this so-called discipline in school has nothing to do with kids being bad.
So I am really glad that that's the interpretation that you're making, because that's exactly right in terms of what this impressive body of work is suggesting. Indeed, it's saying that particularly for our African-American, our Hispanic and Latino students, that we can do something differently that can keep them engaged in school without removing them at 2 to 3 times the rate of their peers like we're currently doing, that there are interventions, there are options, there are just common sense things that everyday teachers and principals and others are doing that are indeed showing that it is not only possible, but it's real, that we are keeping more of our kids in school, helping them to learn at high levels, and not removing them from the opportunity to learn.
Some of this stuff is common sense. School removal is too often a response to minor rule breaking. Is part of the, as you all go through this, using not just alternative schools, but you got to stay after school, study hall, Saturday school, other ways?
Yes, I would say all of those things, as well as creating school climates and cultures that are respectful and responsive to what students need. I'd also like to just briefly have Letitia Smith-Evans, who's here with me. She is can provide a real national perspective on this information. She is with the NAACP's Legal Defense and Education Fund.
Welcome, my sister. This is an issue NAACP has been interested in for a long, long time, as I understand it.
Yes, that's accurate. And for over 70 years, we have obviously advocated for equal educational opportunities for all students, in particular African-American students and other youth of color. And you're right on when you talk about the reasons why students have been historically suspended. And I can tell you that recent national data shows that 95% of all out-of-school suspensions are for nonviolent offenses, also known as minor infractions. That could be something as simple as not wearing your uniform or not having your shirt tucked in. And the Secretary of Education and the Attorney General of the United States made clear that that can't happen any longer. They also made clear that these things are happening in large part because students are being discriminated against. So the research that the collaborative has just released today is very important because, as Kariga mentioned, it's a step forward in helping schools figure out how to have climates that are safe and supportive for all students, especially students of color. And we know that African-American students today are suspended at rates nearly 3 times those of their white counterparts. And that is seriously problematic. We also have data that in one state, the state of Maryland, in one school year, just one school year alone, 91 pre-kindergarten students were suspended. And that should not be the introduction of a young child into the education system.
There are people listening right now that are saying, okay, Kariga, you know, lady from the NAACP, okay, I hear you, but to use the term of the late comic Robin Harris, you know, there are some Bay's kids in our schools. And do reports like this leave the impression that we are condoning Bay kid behavior in our schools?
So I really appreciate you bringing that question to the fore, and I would respond to that in two ways. I think number one, there is no credible evidence that African American, Hispanic, and Latino kids misbehave at higher rates than their peers, especially 2 to 3 times worse than their peers. That's just factually inaccurate. Now, second, it's not that African-American, Hispanic, and Latino students don't have challenges. They do, just like a whole bunch of other kids have challenges. Part of this work is designed to say, how can we support and help all students, you know, through this? So are there some kids of color that have some challenges? Yes. Are there, you know, white kids that have challenges? Yes. We have to support all of those students. But I think the big point here is that the idea that somehow our kids in our community are somehow, you know, dramatically engaging in more serious misbehavior, which isn't the case, or are, you know, dramatically engaging in so much disruptive behavior that they should be removed from school at 2 to 3 times more than white kids is just false on its face.
And just to add, Amos, this is Leticia again from the Legal Defense Fund. Just to add briefly that there's data that demonstrates when you have two students, one who's African-American and one who is white, commit the same quote-unquote offense, they are treated differently. Mm. So they receive different treatment where one student who is African-American may be actually suspended and the white student may actually just get a phone call home. So there are disparities that are evident and that the data clearly shows here.
You talk about the gathering of data, disseminating data. Does it also mean that data shouldn't be 2 years old before it's publicly released by a State Department of Education or a school system?
So without throwing anybody under the bus, I think what we would say is that timely information is critical for teachers and parents and the larger community to make informed decisions about how to best serve kids. So to the degree that we have delays in data, that becomes problematic because we do not have the most up-to-date information to make the interventions necessary in our schools.
And just to add, Amos, advocates, including the Equity Project at Indiana University and LDF and a host of others, have really pushed the federal government to be consistent with respect to the collection of data. We have pushed for a universal data collection, which we have gotten. We want data from all schools, and we want it in a timely manner. We also want it on an annual basis and want it to be publicly available to everyone. We think it's imperative that people know what's going on inside schools so that they can address concerns and problems once that data is actually analyzed.
One of the other things, and this is maybe not so much for Kariga Rausch, but for Leticia Smith-Evans of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, you know, here in Indiana, we're the home of taxpayer vouchers in private schools. If we're going to collect this data, if we're going to be talking about this, we're talking about public schools, should this issue and the data collection also include schools that are taking Caesar's money, for the private schools that are taking Caesar's money, government money to educate kids?
The schools that are required to give data to the federal government are those that are receiving federal funds.
Okay.
However, we would say that the best practice for any school would be to report and collect and report data. There's no reason why every school out there shouldn't be collecting and reporting data and disaggregating it, quite frankly, by race, by gender, by English learner status, by disability status. So that's something that we would certainly advocate for.
239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's Amos. Thank you. I got a couple questions. Let me go to Carol right quick. Hi, Carol.
Yes, thank you, Amos, and I certainly appreciate this program today. We have formed a new statewide organization called the Children's Policy and Law Initiative of Indiana, and it's based on Kariga's work and also the work of the National Defense Fund for the NAACP. In fact, we had a summit this fall where we had 130 people, and one of the keynote speakers was Matt Krieger from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and we're basing our work exactly on what's being discussed today. In fact, we were able to work with legislators, and we had a bill that was heard this session. It was House Bill 1287 for school discipline, and now that bill is in a study commission. It's for the summer, the study committee for the summer. And so we are looking forward to having legislation that is aligned now with the federal government guiding principles that were just issued in January of this year.
All right. Good. See the things we learn on this program. Appreciate it, Carol. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. You can send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890. Keyword Amos. We're with Letitia Smith-Evans of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Kariga Rausch. A massive study, and they have a special website where you can go and download a whole lot of data. It is rtpcollaborative.indiana.edu. Letitia and Kariga, what should parents and grandparents who are confronted with their kids suffering from this disparate treatment, how should they react? You know, how should they deal with this?
Well, what we have seen is that a number of times parents are not even made aware of the severity of the situation. A lot of times there are parents who are unable to be at a school during pick their child up to find out what happened because of conflicts with work hours. We have really encouraged communities to look at this and try to address this effort collaboratively because, like they say, it takes a village to raise a child. And so we have situations in which a student has been suspended, the parent is unable to get to the hearing in the time required, and without the help of community members who are able to help stand in and help represent that child before the school board, they would not have the opportunity to really engage in a fair process and to be heard. And in many instances, those situations, those suspensions are overturned. So we need to really have a system in which people are able to leverage assistance in their communities. And it doesn't have to be lawyers. It can be other community members who are on the ground and who are involved. It could be PTA. It could even be educators who are involved in these issues and very passionate about these issues.
Yep, and I would add to that really quickly. Amos, one of the things you are absolutely terrific about is making sure that our community knows their rights. Parents have specific rights before their child is suspended out of school or expelled. There is due process that is required by Indiana law. There has to be timely notification. There has to be an opportunity for a hearing. There are specific steps that schools must take with parents before any final action is done. So, and you are just terrific, Amos, about letting the community know about what their rights are. I would take a step back and also to speak broadly to suggest that parents working collaboratively with their kids and with their schools even prevent either teachers' misperceptions of kids or to prevent them being removed from school altogether is also an important intervention.
Let me go to Larry at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
I've seen this a long time ago. They're talking about data. That's what they can relate to because they're trying to get their doctorate degree or whatever. They don't know the implications of the data that they raise. When they come into a vulnerable community, and they try to put the Hispanics in on it now, but the Hispanics have a community. Blacks do not have a community. That's the parents. What they do is do these studies to collect the evidence and see what's hurting the black community the most. It's been this way for many years. They find out this evidence, then they intensify those things that are doing the most damage to our community. We need to be careful when we give this data up. Just like the program yesterday with Mayor Ballard, all they want to do is to find the kids that do not have cases and triage them until such time that they can come to the legal system and then pin those cases on them so it'll be an orderly process. So I think these people maybe have some good intent, but they are destroying and helping to categorize and marginalize more our community by collecting data from vulnerable people and giving them, quite frankly, misleading information, and then expecting our community to come when we really don't have a community.
239-1310. In the things that Larry said, does he have a point that you collect so much data, it reinforces the disproportionality and it allows the majority community and others to say, I told you those people were no good?
What I would say kind of quickly to that is that's why it is extremely important the points that are made in this information. We actually have an entire paper on our website about this, that there is no credible evidence that removal from school at very high rates for African-American, Hispanic, Latino kids is due to their own misbehavior. It's a systemic issue that implicates schools to change their practices. I would agree very much with Larry's point if we were on this show saying, hey, you know, our kids are being removed at high levels, you know, and it's their fault entirely. And that, and, you know, we have to change, you know, what our kids are doing. No, what the research is very clearly saying is that, that there are school practices and policies and things that schools and communities can do to change these disparate results that we're seeing.
Kareek, yeah, go ahead, Leticia.
Quickly, so if we didn't have that data led to the federal government, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Education on January 8th, 2014, that's just a couple months ago, releasing federal discipline guidance, making clear that civil rights of students cannot be violated and that, if they are violated, they will be reinforced, and that they made clear that students are being disciplined at disproportionate rates based on their race because of racial discrimination. The data that has been collected has helped inform and drive the movement to make sure that the federal government and other state governments are going to be involved and make sure that they are not discriminating against students.
Where in the data, where does training of teachers and school staff come in? Somebody could give me a ball, allow me to stand behind center at the Indianapolis Colts, try to run the offense against the New England Patriots, and I would get massacred because I know nothing about reading the defense or even throwing the ball. So where is the training to train teachers on how to adjust to a kids generally and kids of color?
So I am so glad that you asked that question. We have a very specific paper that is titled How Educators Can Eradicate Disparities. It's the interventions briefing paper that is all about exactly what it is you described. What are some specific practices? What are some specific orientations? What are some specific programs? What are some specific approaches that teachers and principals in schools can take right now to change the kind of disparate race discipline that we're currently seeing in our schools?
Let me go quickly to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Hi. Basically, that's sort of on point with my inquiry, which is how much observational data would be in this study. I am a parent and also sometimes a substitute teacher, and I observe a lot of things like the reading of a book, Nancy, to all boys of color, you know, and I'm like, why is this book, Nancy, being read to, you know, when they segregate boys from girls and predominantly boys of color? I see negative commentary instead of positive motivation being given to children, telling them you can be anything you want to be. I'm hearing statements like, I know a bunch of you don't like to read, but I want you to know there's going to be a bunch of reading when you get to college, so you're really not going to want to read, you know. So I'm like, where is the watchdog and the observer within these classrooms? Our children are there 8 hours a day, and there's like no one in those classrooms monitoring the behaviors of the teachers.
That's a great point. Was any of this research not just, you know, dry on paper, but based on observational?
Yes. So especially the interventions paper describes both a kind of qualitative and quantitative research. It's based on, folks that have actually spent lots of time in schools piloting new approaches, engaging in different things, which, by the way, one of the most important research-based findings we are showing that can not only reduce use of suspension and expulsion and office referrals overall, but also shrink the gap between white kids and kids of color, is improving the quality of relationships between teachers and students of color in a very intentional and structured way. So I'd encourage your audience to get on the website to look at that paper in particular, the interventions paper, because it does describe the reality that schools are facing, but specifically generating, here are things that schools are doing that can result in different results for our kids.
And one final call, another Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
Hey, that's good what they've been saying, but Brenda's been saying for the past 10 years, and some of the school policy backs up the theory, the prison pipeline. You know, some of the victims or the parents should get together and sue the federal government for this. Thank you, my friend.
And Kariga, I know you know the passion of Brenda. Does this research vindicate a lot of what she's been saying over the years?
So Brenda has been talking about issues of disciplinary disparities and especially for kids with disabilities for a while. And indeed, what this research says is that particularly at the intersection of kids of color and disabilities, that we see, you know, huge disproportionate rates, that the federal government, as well as the information that we put out, suggests it doesn't have to be this way. Things can be different. There are a number of avenues that folks can take to address those things. But holistically, what we're currently seeing in our schools, the message of hope is that there are thousands of schools across our country, including in Indiana, that aren't removing kids at super high rates or with marked disparities. My pastor always said, make sure you never forget to leave folks with a message of hope. That's my message of hope, that it doesn't have to be what we're currently seeing.
And this is through Indiana University. So the website is rtpcollaborative.indiana.edu, and then click on disparity, click on briefing papers, and there's a lot of information there, and we'll have links to the site on our website, praiseindy.com, by tomorrow afternoon. Kariga Rausch, always good to talk to you. Letitia Smith Evans of our NAACP Legal Defense Fund, thank you, and thank the entire team for what they have done. We appreciate having you guys on.
Thank you, Amos.